Was the wildebeest saying hello, good afternoon, welcome to Animal Voices on Co-op Radio in Vancouver, 102.7 FM. My name is John Pranger, and with me in the studio are Marge Adams, Jenna Hunt, and Carl Loskin. We'll be presenting the views of three guests today, so it will be a packed program, and we got to hurry along. Our first guest will be Shannon Nakaya, who's the author of the book Kindred Spirit, Kindred Care, Making Health Decisions on Behalf of Our Animal Companions. Dr. Nakaya has written a wonderful guide to good physical and spiritual health for our companion animals, and every pet caregiver will benefit from having this volume in his library. The website for Dr. Nakaya is www.kindredspiritkindredcare.com. We'll give it out later again, too. After that, Carl will be speaking with Jane Broccolo. When animal communicator Jane Broccolo opens up a dialogue between you and your animals, you could find out there's even a lot more to you than you might think. She translates into human language your animal's unique insights about you, as well as their own hopes and fears and desires, and empowers them when needed with gentle Reiki healing energy and polarity acupressure. Carl will be speaking with Jane Broccolo later on. Her website is www.talkswithpets.com. talkswithpets.com. And the last part of the show, Jenna Hunt will be speaking with Anna LaPay, who was the daughter of the very famous Francis Moore LaPay, perhaps the most influential, at least American, book that helped move many people to vegetarian was the popular Diet for a Small Planet by Francis Moore LaPay, and it was came out in 1971. While it didn't directly promote vegetarianism, it made many people aware that raising animals for food was extremely wasteful of land, grain, water, energy, and other resources at a time when millions of people were dying annually due to hunger and its effects. So Frances Moore LaPay's daughter, Anna LaPay, is the co-founder with her mother of the Small Planet Fund and a regular public speaker and commentator on food politics, globalization, and the media. Her newest book is Hope's Edge, The Next Diet for a Small Planet. And we'll be talking to her at about 20 minutes, too. And so I think we were going to hear from Dr. Suzuki, but that's not going to happen. So call your pet over and enjoy the show as Marge Adams leads off with a conversation with author Shannon Nakaya. You're listening to Animal Voices on Co-op Radio in Vancouver, 102.7 FM.
Thank you, John. Shannon Fujimoto Nakaya is a doctor of veterinary medicine who has been practicing for 20 years. She now divides her time between Massachusetts and Hawaii, doing veterinary consulting and relief work, while continuing to develop her healing skills. Dr. Nakaya is the author of a recently published book, as John mentioned, and it's titled Kindred Spirit, Kindred Care, and it's about making responsible decisions for our animal companions. Welcome to Animal Voices, Dr. Nakaya.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. Now, to get going on our questions, I'd like to ask you, first of all, the health care of our companion animals is extremely important to those of us who share our homes with these other species. Now, you recommend a holistic approach when making health care decisions for these companion animals. Now, will you please explain to us what is that holistic approach?
Well, holistic, by definition, refers to looking at the patient as a whole. And at one level, that means looking at them beyond their organ systems, that you don't just focus on a heart or a kidney. You look at how all the different systems interact, and so that you don't, by fixing one system, compromise another system and push that one over the edge. There's also a level at which you factor in their lifestyle and their temperament and their personality and who they are and really what they might want, so that you can achieve both a quality of living for every day that they have.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose you have to choose the correct veterinarian, don't you, in order to get the animal treated in a holistic way. How does one go about choosing the right veterinarian?
Well, I think one of the first things to do is acknowledge that there are many different veterinarians and many different styles of practice out there, and that things go smoother and better when you find someone who seems to fit with you and your pet, share similar values about what's important and how to proceed and how to treat them. So I encourage people to stop and sit down and think about what's important to them and what kind of care, whether it's important for them to be involved in the process or whether they'd prefer to have a veterinarian who's going to tell them what to do, whether they prefer somebody who's going to look at both Western ways of treating things and alternative ways of treating things, or who's much more biased in one particular approach or another. And once they decide what things are important to them, then they go out and do some research and find a veterinarian who can fulfill those needs.
Is that usually done through telephoning various clinics?
You can learn a lot through calling up places and telephones. The internet is a good source of information, and frankly, a lot of times it's word of mouth that people talk to their neighbors and their friends and learn things by word of mouth.
It's increasingly complicated today because so many veterinarians are specializing, aren't they?
It does get more complicated because there are many specialists in so many different ways. And oftentimes, as there are more specialists, you end up having, much like in human medicine, several doctors involved in caring for one patient. Then you need a coordinator so that something doesn't get left on the side as everybody's focusing on their one area.
Uh-huh. Now, I know that one situation that often arises is when one takes her pet or companion animal, I should say, to the veterinarian. There are so many tests suggested, blood tests, x-rays, CAT scan, and goodness knows how many others. What is your reaction to all this testing? Is it very necessary? I mean, veterinarians have functioned for many, many years diagnosing because of their own skill. Now, what are all these tests warranted?
Well, sometimes they can be helpful. I don't deny that they have a purpose and a use. I think you're right in that in the past, when we didn't have all this fancy technology at our disposal, doctors and veterinarians were trained to use their observation, their observational skills more in terms of figuring out what was going on with the patient, that they would use their eyes and their ears and their hands and their feeling, and they would listen to what people were describing, and they would pay attention to what their patients were saying or demonstrating and what the people were describing to them. And they would in some ways, we were trained to do more with that and depend less on the numbers and the diagnostics and the x-rays and the images and so on and so forth. And if doctors and veterinarians would remember that can be so valuable, that's certainly, to me, really important, really helpful. I do think the technology is nice in confirming what you might be seeing or believing that you see in a patient, and that confirmation gives you a little bit more confidence that you actually aren't missing something.
Mm-hmm. I sometimes feel that because this machinery is available, and probably there's a big investment in it on the part of the clinic, it must be used, perhaps more than necessary.
Yes, you mm-hmm. and a lot of other people, mm-hmm. and that it is. It is very tricky to not succumb to the economic and the financial demands that you invest in this equipment to have it, and then you feel obliged to really kind of use it, and then it becomes something that you negotiate with your economics not to overuse it, particularly when it can involve putting a patient through a procedure that's stressful or, you know, demanding on them.
Now, thinking a little bit ahead of the in the process, the treatment is another aspect of veterinary care that has changed a lot over the years. There's now so many possibilities, and some of them are pretty extreme. Just transferred from human medicine, like radiation, chemotherapy, and various other treatments for cancer. Now, I just wonder, is it wise to be putting all of this on an animal, all of these kinds of treatments, or do you have some hesitation about that? How far should one go?
Right. Once again, it will depend tremendously on the patient and the client and their overall condition. I think sometimes some choices might seem more realistic for, perhaps I don't want to say that a younger animal is worth more than an older animal, but a younger animal with more reserves and resilience would be more likely to tolerate some of the stresses on their body from procedures like radiation than, say, an older patient. So that, you know, those things factor in.
It's all part of the quality of life, I suppose, isn't it, that you can expect after the treatment.
Right. And, I'm a strong believer in do no harm. In the process, and I think sometimes if you just barrel ahead, you can certainly ignore some of these things and end up looking back on what you've done.
And sometimes we have to consider whether we're treating the animal because we don't want to lose it or whether it's best for the animal. And that's not always easy to distinguish, I don't think, is it?
It's never long enough, and that's probably some of the hardest choices that people battle with. Mm-hmm. I think, though, to be fair, most of the people that I deal with really, really, when it comes down to it, don't want to make decisions that are selfish. Overwhelmingly, I deal with people who are in some ways their biggest concern. And the question that I'm asked very frequently is, am I being selfish?
Mm-hmm.
And I think just the fact that they're asking that question says a lot for who they are and what they really want.
Is cancer more common today? I know that I seem to see more of it or hear more of it in the pet population, but is it just that we hear more about it, or is it actually more common?
I think it's really hard to say. It's much like in humans. I think we don't have quite as many demographic numbers for animals as they do for humans, but there's a couple components. One is that animals, like people, are living longer because we've gotten by a lot of the infectious diseases. So they're not, in some ways, they're living long enough to develop cancer and changes to their body like that is probably one of the bigger ones. I think the second piece is that we have greater ability to diagnose some of these things.
Oh, yes. I sometimes wonder about the food we feed our animals, most of us, I guess, by commercially produced food, and feed that to them. Now, we know that most of that is not saleable for human consumption. Now, could there be problems with the food that would be toxic to the animal and produce cancer?
I suppose there could be. Once again, it's a really difficult question. If you look at the benefits and the risks of commercial pet foods, for the most part, the foods need to be are based on nutritional needs that have been studied and continue to be updated along the way. I think in some ways, the average pet food is getting a steadier, more consistent plane of nutrition than the average human, and that certainly counts for something. And certainly the pet food companies have put a lot of time and money into research, and so things have gotten better. There are diseases that used to be common that are much less common these days because they've modified diets. So in some ways, pet foods are, because it is a controlled formula, it's a work in progress, and there are benefits, and certainly there are probably some trade-offs about all the processing. Mm-hmm. Certainly every time I turn the bag of food around and think about the digest and the processing and how much it's gone through, it kind of makes me cringe.
I can appreciate that. A different question that I've been asked to ask you is, what is your opinion on annual animal vaccinations, as we have been encouraged to have over the years, thinking particularly of cats and dogs? Is that a good idea?
It depends on the patient, and it depends on where they are. Certainly, the manufacturers of the vaccines, overwhelmingly the vaccines are labeled to be administered once a year. That's because the manufacturers have tested them and said that they are good for protecting a patient for a period of 1 year. In reality, many of them probably are working for much longer than that, and the challenge is that the manufacturers are motivated to support the testing to prove that and to change the labeling. Some of the universities have been doing private studies and have demonstrated that in all likelihood these vaccines are good for much longer than that, but the period's very variable depending on the different studies, and these studies take time and they take funding, and so once again it's kind of a work in progress. I think the immune system, I think they've demonstrated that you can get more than a year on most of these vaccines, at least in middle-aged healthy animals. We still don't know what happens in older animals. Do they need more vaccines as they age because their immune systems might get weaker, or do they have enough immunity built up over years and years and years that they need fewer vaccines? And those are some of the questions that still need to be studied, and so that we can make educated choices and educated decisions. I think the second thing that I've learned is that the lifestyle of the animal really plays a lot. If you have an indoor cat in a generally healthy public health environment, then they're going to need much fewer vaccinations than if you have an outdoor cat in an area where, say, feline leukemia is endemic. So lifestyle will also play into, how frequently. I don't mean to not answer your question specifically, but there are no, there's not a one-size-fits-all kind of an answer for that one.
Well, is there a possibility for a veterinarian to test the antibodies in the blood and determine whether or not a vaccine is needed at that particular time?
There are titers for many, although not all, of the diseases that we vaccinate for, and say, once again, it's a little bit of a work in progress. The more these tests are developed and the more fine-tuned they get, the more accurate they get, the more we can actually rely on them. There's also cost issues. A lot of times, the more they get developed and the more they get used, then the cost of the titers will decrease, and that will make things more affordable for, the average person.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Nakaya. It's been a real, real treat to have you here. I wish we could talk longer, but I'm afraid our time has run out. So thank you again.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You were listening to an interview with Dr. Shannon Fujimoto Nakaya, who is author of Kindred Spirit, Kindred Care, and her website is www.kindredspiritkindredcare.com. KindredSpiritKindredCare.com.
Thank you, Marge. Mm-hmm. And we'll be going to for a little break. After that, Carl will be speaking with Jane Broccolo, who is the animal communicator, and we'll be having a dialogue with her in one moment. Thank you.
Welcome, everyone, to Animal Voices. So, yes, this is your community-based and community-sponsored radio station, 102.7 FM in Vancouver. Scott Halsey wrote, "The animals are our teachers. They are currently making great sacrifices for us. When everyone has learned from this sacrifice, there will be a new level of relating as equal beings." Yes, Scott Halsey wrote that we will be relating as equal beings. Well, our special guest today is someone who has looked at some of these aspects of how we communicate with our kindred species. Jane Broccolo is an animal communicator, and she says, "Animals are my passion. Speaking out for them is my obsession." Welcome to Animal Voices, Jane Broccolo.
Carl, thank you.
You know, there are many ways in which to communicate with animals, but you have raised this to a new level. And you say there is more to your animal than you might think. What do you mean?
That's right. Well, people seem to project their own thoughts onto what their animals are. And they give them attributes which they really don't have.
So what are these attributes that we give them?
Well, first of all, the attributes of, they're just absolutely, totally unconditionally loving and totally cute and complete children. And so they're being treated as though they're beings less than what they are and less than what we are. And it's very interesting that you the lead-in to your show today is about animals wanting us to be with them on an equal level. And that's what, for me, animal self-empowerment is all about. And it's about animals want us to come from a place of knowing, to communicate with them, so that we can be with them on an equal level. It's almost as though, in a way, they're kind of up there on this higher level of intuition and knowing and waiting for us to catch up.
So we could be, in a way, patronizing. And when we see our dog being docile, we think it is maybe a happy animal. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. So many people think, oh, he's such a sweet, happy animal, et cetera, et cetera, and he does everything I say. And the truth of the matter is, I mean, look at how many people are docile. And these people are very unhappy. They're what we call yes people. And we also have that in the realm of domesticated animals who are pets. A lot of them are yes pets. You see a lot of them in dog shows. I mean, it's really pathetic the way we have denigrated our animals. It's just sad because they have so many aspects to them. They have so much wisdom and intelligence, and they're not able to be really living in their true passion. And it's because we as human beings have gotten to a place where we ourselves are not connected to our true nature. And so we project our own dysfunction onto these animals, when in fact these animals, if we really were able, and by being able I mean if we allowed ourselves to take the time to really be in that deep place of knowing, not only would the animals benefit, but we would benefit.
You know, Jane, in the introduction today to our program, John had a really nice line, and he said that you translate into human language your animals' unique insights. So tell us more about that.
Well, because animals come from that place of knowing, whereas humans, most of us exist on the level of concepts and complicated thoughts, which is a step down from that place of knowing. You know, when you just know something, you just know it and you don't have to think about it, you just get it immediately. Well, animals come from that place. And I can give you an example of a woman who came to me with her mother, and the young woman was pregnant. And she didn't have her cat with her because the way I work, I don't need to have the animals in front of me because I work on an energetic level. So I tune into the cat, and what the cat said was it was very upset because the father of the baby was a very violent man. He was a very violent young man, and that when the baby was born, he was going to become very violent with the young mother. Now, this is an animal that knows this because all of the information is already there, but the animals already have access to information about us that we're not even aware of.
Right. So take the projection here of maybe somebody has a pet, and yes, it observes everybody really keenly. We're not quite sure what this noise is. There we go.
Yes.
But you have taken it one step further. How can, say, somebody listening today, they have a dog, and the dog they know keenly observes them all the time. It's loving, and they think that the dog is happy, and this person has listened to you today, and they want to take it one step further. What do you say to them?
Okay, what I say to them is to really look at their animal, and I'm not talking about looking at the animal physically, but to really watch, to tune into the animal and really ask the question, why is this animal behaving this way? Is this animal truly happy?
Right. And then, of course, I love that example of that you gave, but you also, you communicate on another level. Is this what you mean by animal self-empowerment?
Yes, what I mean by animal self-empowerment, okay, take for the example that you just gave about the animal that's so loving and could very well be a happy animal, but could very well be a very oppressed animal. And so animal self-empowerment is about taking our animals, our pets, and realizing that they too came into this life with a purpose, with passions. And for instance, if you leave an animal alone all day in the house, or maybe with a little doggy door or a little kitty door, and you come home, 8 hours later, and you don't understand why your animal is depressed, and you say, well, gee, I give this animal so much love, and, this is my number one love being. I just don't understand why this animal is so depressed. Well, the animal's depressed because it has all these senses. It wants to be alive. It wants to fully fulfill being an animal, being a part of nature. Just as humans who are in the cities and they never get to leave the city are walking around in a form of depression because they're never out in nature.
Now, of course, when we keep animals as pets, we spay them, we do all kinds of neuter them, we do all kinds of unnatural things which we wouldn't consider doing to ourselves.
Yes, exactly.
And it does draw people to a loving level. So there is this compromise thing. But maybe you can just tell us how you deal with communication with these animals. You're a medium, and people are fascinated with that because when I met you at the Animal Rights Convention in Los Angeles, you had this wonderful story about people know about that people can communicate with horses, and you had this wonderful story about the cat and the horse.
Yes, I think that was someone else talking about the cat and the horse. My story, I have my own story about a horse, and that's when I was 4 years old, and my first friend and only friend for a few years was a bay horse called Bric-a-Brac. And I had two older sisters who were quite nasty to me simply because they were older than I was. And Bric-a-Brac and I were very close, and the days that my sisters were nasty to me, Bric-a-Brac knew, and when they would ride her, she would throw them off in a most gentle way. When they were just trotting on her or walking, she would suddenly just get up and just throw them off her back. And that was my communication with a first communication with a horse. Another communication that I've noticed a lot with horses is that they have an overwhelming feeling of compassion. Because I sense things on an energetic level, sometimes when I also do Reiki on animals, and sometimes when I'm working with horses in particular, it is so overwhelming, the energy of love that comes over me when I'm working with these animals. Sometimes I feel that the human heart can't even contain the compassion that these animals hold. And I think it's because they are so open. They are so, pardon the expression, but so out of their heads and so much in their heart that they have the capacity to really heal us if we will just allow ourselves to open up.
So your message is open up, speak to your animal, communicate with them. If all fails, call Jane Broccolo. Give us your webpage.
Yes, it's animalselfempowerment.com, and that's without any hyphens.
Okay.
And all of my contact info is on that.
And then
the whole point is that animals will bring us into our deeper animal self, which is that of awareness and intuition and knowing.
That's so nice. And also you have talkswithpets.com.
Yes, which is very cute, and that's what I started out with, and I felt people could relate to that. But it's really time that we got away from cute.
Right.
That we really get beyond cute.
So what you're teaching us is to have a look at our pet and wonder what's on your pet's mind. And maybe it's important to think what's on your mind. Are we treating the animal as something that belongs to you, as an owner of a pet, or are we its guardian? And I think you mentioned that idea.
Yes, and we are the guardian of these animals, and they are also our guardians. It's a mutual give and take. They are not with us for a free meal. They are with us for an exchange of energy and love, but not the human touchy-feely kind of love, the deep love that only can come from deep awareness and compassion. Because when you open up to that level of awareness and compassion, you cannot help but have compassion for all sentient beings. And that is the only way that we are going to heal ourselves and the planet and to stop wars, is by first healing ourselves and extending our love to encompass all.
Dr. Jane Goodall, she said, only when we understand can we care. Only when we care shall we help. Only if we help will all be saved. And in so doing, we save ourselves as well.
That is so perfect.
Dr. Jane Goodall. Now, I'd like to just raise one other aspect there, and that is that if many religions believe that humans have a soul, and if humans have a soul, would you not consider it to be logical that this right of a spiritual afterlife should also belong to our kindred species?
Yes. First of all, it's not only logical. I've experienced that that's the only way that it can be. First of all, on a scientific level, we are made up. Atoms, energy never dies. Matter is energy. And we are made up of stars and all beings. We have it within our bodies. And when we die, the energy of our consciousness lives on. And I have spoken to many animals who have been deceased and who have come through me and spoken. There are some animals, if you believe in reincarnation, have been humans in other lifetimes. I don't believe in that. If people believe in reincarnation, as I do, I don't believe in hierarchies. I believe that you can come in as a human one lifetime and come in as an ant as another, and et cetera. Humans do not have ownership of importance on this planet. They are not superior to any other being. They have a different kind of intelligence. Every sentient being has its own unique intelligence.
It is as you say. We are all bound together in the web of life.
Yes.
And what we do to one, we literally do to all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I just wanted to say one thing. When I was talking to you this morning, I mentioned to you about how I can feel how open your heart is. And if anything, if it's just for selfish reasons, if people can just open their hearts to encompass compassion for all living beings, they themselves will live a healthier life because their heart will be healthier, their bodies will be healthier, they'll live longer, and they'll live more joyfully.
You know, I'm just looking at the faces of John and the people here in the studio, and Marge, and they have this wonderment at what you're saying. And, you know, you inspire humans to see beyond, and this is your own words, to see beyond superficial separation of species and to eventually embrace all animals as sacredly endowed with the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, including the ones who end up on our plates.
Yes.
So
thank you.
That's what we do to our fellow humans. You've inspired us today. Thank you very much for being
very
on
kind.
Animal Voices. And give us your webpage again.
AnimalSelfEmpowerment.com. No hyphens.
Thank you, Dr. Jane Broccola. I nearly called you Dr. Jane Goodall. Bye for now.
Thank you so much, Carl. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, you're listening to Animal Voices coming to you on CFRO Radio 102.7 FM. Many of our programs can be heard on our webpage, animalvoices.org.
And all the links to the web pages are there already, so if you want to take a look, the program isn't up yet, but the links are. So I went a little ahead of myself today, as a matter of fact. Now, we're going to be listening to Anna LaPay, who is a co-founder with her mother of the Small Planet Fund. And her website is smallplanetinstitute.org. We're just going to take a little break and be right back with Jenna Hunt and Anna LaPay.
Thank you. sunlight comes early. It's early in the day. It's 4 o'clock and we're on our way. I want to live on Miley, but it can't be found. Better days on the fishing ground. And we tack off hipper in a dirty lawn. And the pigs were bouncing, man, and you could see them jump.
We've had a little bit of difficulty getting through to our next person, LaPage. So we'll have her on, LaPage. She'll be on at another show. Great, wonderful lady with a great message. So, Marge, you have an announcement. So, over to you.
Thank you. Yes, there are a couple of events coming up that I'd like to mention. One is on tomorrow. That's Saturday, August the 20th. So if you're listening to this on the replay, on Monday, it will already be over. But for those of you who can make it to the Greater Vancouver Zoo demonstration tomorrow, it will be from 12 to 3 p.m., and it's in Aldergrove. There are rides available, so that I'll give you a number later. It's 5048 264th Street in Aldergrove. Now, the reason that there's going to be a demonstration is because the Greater Vancouver Zoo has not made significant progress on the hippo enclosure. Remember, earlier this year, the second hippo died because of inadequate housing, so that the Vancouver Humane Society and others are trying to get some action on that front. Now, rides will be available whenever possible. So if you need a ride anywhere in the Greater Vancouver area, please contact Jan Olson, all one word, J-A-N-O-L-S-O-N, at telus.net. Jan Olson at telus.net. And you'll probably be able to get a ride out. Now, if you are planning to attend and would like to be notified in the unlikely event of cancellation, this would only be if the Greater Vancouver Zoo suddenly came forward and announced they were making the necessary changes, then please email Ashley Fruno at hotmail.com. Fruno, I'll spell the whole. All one word. A-S-H-L-E-Y-F-R-E-N-O.
Underscore Fruno.
Oh, and _Fruno@hotmail.com.
That's right. And that, when will that be, Marge?
That is tomorrow, Saturday, okay. August the 20th.
Okay, that's great.
Now, there's one other I want to mention.
Okay,
please.
Fire away.
And this is at KFC, commonly known as Kentucky Fried Chicken. And it's a demonstration that will take place Saturday, August the 27th, a week tomorrow. And it will be held at 795 East Broadway in Vancouver. And it's a in an attempt to get greater media coverage, several activists have agreed to wear beaks and a body, have their bodies painted yellow. So if you're interested in being costumed activists, which is semi-nude, I think, please let Ashley know. And also, they would like to have all kinds of people who are fully clothed and ready to hand out leaflets and carry posters, etc. Posters and leaflets will be available there. So that will be the same number.
Ashley_Fruno@hotmail.com. Thank you, Marge. And over to Jenna Hunt, and she has a little poetry or fire away.
Well, this is from Hope's Edge. It's The Next Diet for Small Planet by Frances Moore LaPay and Anna LaPay. And in it, it's a lot of anecdotes of the explorations of the two women as they explore the world looking for more organic farming, more sustainable agriculture, and stories of what genetic modified foods are doing to the earth. And we have a poem here at the end by Denise Levertov from her book called Beginners. But we have only begun to love the earth. We have only begun to imagine the fullness of life. How could we tire of hope? So much is in bud. How can desire fail? We have only begun to imagine justice and mercy, only begun to envision how it might be to love as siblings with beast and flower, not as oppressors. We have only begun to know the power that is in us if we would join our solitudes in the communion of struggle. So much is unfolding that must complete its gesture. So much is in bud.
We have only just begun. That was a song. It was one of the pop charts there. Alan, I think you know that one. This is... yesterday, Thursday, the 18th of August, we had a wonderful article in the Vancouver Sun, and it said, it showed pigs in these crates, gestation crates, and of course they can't even turn around, they can't scratch themselves, and they're chained. Oh, and these poor animals, what they do is they...
are they chained by the neck there, Colonel?
You know, and it's 14 million animals... pigs are slaughtered in Canada every year. And what this article, it was written by the Coalition for the Canadian Coalition for Farm Animals. And we thank the Vancouver Sun for mentioning this. And Stephanie Brown wrote it, and she says, Canadian livestock industries are coming increasingly under fire for the deplorable state of animal welfare on Canadian farms. But instead of responding by improving animal welfare standards, they're resorting to good old-fashioned public relations to solve the problems. Well, public relations does not help the plight of the animals in these crates. She also mentions the deplorable situation transportation of animals, only one aspect of these animals, and also... the resolution of this lies in the Canadian food retailers who, unlike the producers, they are answerable directly to the public, and they've been nudging producers groups to take a more proactive approach to farm animal welfare. So that's where everybody comes into the picture. If you're a consumer, let people know, you'd like to know how your food is being produced and where it's coming from. And that is how we will raise the consciousness of the people and what we're eating, and also the cruelty towards animals. And by the way, we only have a few minutes. I'll leave it over to John Pranger, who has a few words here. But we are so far behind Europe. And even I despair when I think that in Europe, these gestation crates for pigs are going to become unlawful, but only in the year 2013. Why do we have to? How many more animals have to suffer? And my pet peeve is that many of these factory farms of animals are on agricultural land reserve land. These are industries. They're not mom and pop operations. They're not mom and pop farming operations that we want. And let's make it quite clear. What we want is family farms, not factory farms. Over to you, John.
Unfortunately, I think the government thinks that these are backward practices, organic and so on, and it's promoting rather what they think is the cutting edge, which is genetic engineering and all these things. But these things only lead to monopoly control, and the patent of pigs now, by the attempt to patent pigs by Monsanto, is a big step in that direction. And God help us if these things go through the way they seem to be. Well, I think that's going to have to end the show. We hope you enjoyed this edition of Animal Voices on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, and that you'll tune in again next week. Sorry we couldn't get our guest. But thanks to the interesting guests that we had today, Shannon Nakaya and Jane Broccolo. Alan Jensen was, and still is, in the control room. Our website is animalvoices.org. Say goodbye to your animal friends for us. And Al, if you're listening, please give me a call at 604-684-7561. Goodbye, everybody.